Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to another special episode of You're Welcome. I'm joined by Cowboy Cerrone. And Cowboy, instead of telling you hello, I think I should start with a thank you. Thank you for that incredible fight you put out Saturday. How are you feeling?
Oh, good, man. Back on the ranch, hanging out.
What in the hell? I mean, Lawler didn't waste any time to get in a fist fight, did he? I mean, he came right out and he tried to get rid of you like you were somebody a guy could just get rid of. I don't know if I agree with his strategy there, but it was sure a good way to kick things off.
Well, that's, people think that's the way to attack me, come at me. I'm a slow starter. The problem with being a slow starter is if you rush me, now I'm a fast starter because now I'm ready to go. You know what I mean? I got to take that. So it kind of backfired on him, I think. He didn't even plan on me just weathering the little storm he had and bringing it out.
You know, so many people thought you won that fight, and the crowd was kind of booing when Robbie was having his moment. And I thought Robbie handled it perfectly, and he handled it by just simply telling the truth. Rogan asked him, you know, what do you think of the fight? And he told the truth, and he goes, I didn't know. I thought I won the first round. I thought he won the second. I didn't know who the hell won the third, so there's your decision. It's like, you're right, Robbie. That is what happened. He did come out in the first. Yeah. You did come out in the second. And none of us knew what happened in the third. And I just appreciated Lawler. You know, Lawler's always such a real guy. But I just thought that was the perfect time to just really tell the truth, which is anybody could have won this and they gave it to me. All right, cool.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. I mean, what the hell? We went in there and did the fight exactly what everyone thought we were going to do. And, I mean, we needed two more rounds for sure. But, hey, I'm not mad. I'm not walking with my head down. I went in there and stood toe-to-toe with one of the fucking best strikers in the world, man. You know, one of the toughest game guys around. And I'm happy, man. It was fun, you know? Yeah, I only got half my check, but fuck, whatever. I think it's more important to me that everyone's like, God damn it, Cowboys fighting again. I'm watching. This son of a bitch always throws down, you know?
Yeah. Oh, there you go. And, you know, you started this about four or five fights ago, but all of a sudden you're Mr. Takedown. And, you know, even with what you did with Rick Story would stand out with me. What you did when you came out with Cote with those double legs. And then all of a sudden, you know, when you needed that takedown, you did it on Lawler, too. And, of course, we're all sitting at home going, no, Cowboy, stand up with him. We want to see more of this craziness. But it just has been amazing how your game has evolved. You know, I could give Lawler those same compliments. Lawler's a guy that later in his career got better, whereas most guys are starting to go the other way. I just feel like both of you guys are coming in your stride. And it was just such a great fight. I'm glad you're not down about it because you shouldn't be, man. It was a win. It was a win for both of you.
Yeah, no, not down at all, man. It takes, you know, we worked hard for that, trained hard, had a couple complications along the way, but, I mean, like my damn groin was so fucking pulled, it was hard to kick, but it was all right, man. Not making any excuses or complaints. I fucking went in there, and I legitimately had fun, man. Like, that was like the old me coming back, smiling, fucking enjoying, remembering what the fuck I do this for, you know? That to me was important.
Sure. Hey, now, so 170, is that home? I mean, you're never going to see 55 again, are you?
It'd have to be something special, man. It'd really have the title fight, big super fight. You know, if they had a 165 weight class, that would be home for me. Because making 60, I can do. It's that last 5 pounds of 55 that just puts me in the concentration camp, man, and takes it all out of me.
Are they ever going to do that? Are they going to go with those weights? They now have the ability. I think it was California passed it, but are they ever going to do 65, 75, 95 like they talked about? Do you have any insight on that?
I got just the insight you do. They tell me nothing. I didn't even know I was fighting Robbie again until you guys all knew before me. So how about that?
Yeah.
They pulled me off the card, told me I was done. All of a sudden, I see it all over social media. Cowboys fighting 214. I was like, oh, fuck, I was up in the mountains camping. Like, I better not camp anymore. Go try and train.
You know what? That is a compliment, though. Dana used to do that to me, too. I would hear about fights would be announced. Nobody told me. But I always took it as a compliment because there are guys like you and I out there that, man, it doesn't matter. If there's a fight, end of it. Let's go do it. This is what we're here to do.
I'm trying to rally for October 7th, man, in Vegas. You know, I'm trying to, like, let's go right away. Come on. Bring it.
You got an opponent in mind?
No, I don't have an opponent. I never care about the who. I just need to win. That's all I tell. Need to win.
Yeah. Dude, I'm with you.
Put the who in later.
That's an old school mentality, but I do find it refreshing. You know, there's this new champion, Max Holloway, and he's doing that. You know, he's saying anybody, anytime. I don't care what you're ranked. It doesn't have to be the number one guy. It could be the number 10 guy. Yeah. Just give me an opponent. It's like, Max, thank you, man. We need more of that. That used to be the way it was. Donald, when you and I first started, that's the way it was. But now there's a bunch of prima donnas that have taken over this sport, and we all got to sit and live with it.
You're right, man. You're right.
Hey, help me understand something. Tyron Woodley took some lumps after the fact with the media and the fans and even the promotion itself for being boring. What I don't understand is how did and I don't want to bring Damian in on this. I just want to understand the phenomenon. How does Damian Maia's hand stay clean in that? It seems that whoever wins a boring fight gets all of the blame, but the opponent gets away with it.
That's where you're coming at this all wrong. Everybody already knows Damien's a fucking turd. Like, there, you know what I'm saying? Like, that wasn't a new surprise to anybody. Like, he's never had an exciting fight in his life ever. So it's not like, oh, I bet this one he's really gonna go out there and fucking throw down. You know what I mean? So.
Okay. All right. Continue.
And nothing against Damien. I mean, he goes out there and that's what he does. He doesn't strike. He grabs a
he's
hold
a
of
turd.
You and fucking hits you.
Yeah, but you know, poor Woodley. They say hindsight's 20/20, which, you know, for the most part is a factual statement. But even in hindsight, Donald, I don't know what in the hell Tyron could have done. It's just kind of one of those weird matchups. Am I wrong about that? I mean, it's just kind of a hard matchup.
Super hard, because you don't want to get too overzealous and then end up with a guy on your back, you know? So, hey, you got to ask yourself that. Do you want to go out there, put it all on the line, and risk not being a champion anymore, but put a fight on for the fans? Or do you want to say, fuck y'all, I'm about the money, I'm about the longevity in this sport, I'm going to do what I have to do, I'm going to fight to not lose, you know? And just depends on the mentality of the fighter that's in there.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, am going out there to fucking throw down. I would make the mistake. So... But that's just me.
No, I got you. And, you know, we were talking about Lawler smoothing things over PR-wise in his interview by just telling the truth and going, man, I don't know who won that fight. It was really close.
Yeah.
Tyron could have used the same thing. Instead of going, yeah, but there was all these takedown, and what about those defenses? He could have just said, man, that was a snooze fest. I know it was a snooze fest. I'm well aware of how boring that was. You know, but Tyron takes that stuff so personal, and none of this is meant to be a knock on Tyron. I'm just trying to understand the psychology of it.
Yeah,
it's like,
sure.
You got this good-looking, you got this explosive, you got this world champ, you know, he's got so many things in the plus category, but he is a sensitive son of a bitch, and it's like, Tyron, if you're going to be the baddest dude in the world, you got to just go out and be the baddest dude, man. That's just the way it is.
Right.
Toughen up everywhere, including having a little thicker skin at times.
Yeah, you got to have thick skin in this sport, because all it takes is one fucking dude at home on his mom's computer talking shit and it'll ruin your day. So,
right.
Yeah.
So what'd you think about the main event? I mean, you know, were you able to go out and watch and be a fan when you were done?
I was in the hospital. I missed all the fights. I didn't see anything. It took me straight to the hospital. Robbie poked his finger in my eye, and my eye was having problems, like, dilating. It was just staying super dilated. I left me to the hospital to make sure my vision wasn't going. I got all the way to the hospital, and then they fucking released me because it was fine. It came back. It was just in trauma from getting poked. So I'm cleared, and everything's good now, but... It wasn't then.
Did you get to watch the fight? Did you get to see the production yourself after the fact? You go home and...
No, I haven't seen it. I don't ever watch it. I don't watch other people's fight, let alone my own fight. So,
Well, I'll just share this with you. Yeah, he poked the hell out of your eye. I mean, it was like old school Chuck Liddell. They replayed it. It was in slow-mo. And yeah, man, that finger, I didn't even know what finger it was. I don't know what to call that. I guess your ring finger. It went right into your eye.
Oh, yeah. And then I tried covering, and her was like, no, and Robbie's still coming at me. I'm like, oh, shit. Pull it together, Cowboy. Let's go. Fucking God. Couldn't see nothing, but hey, I would have done the same shit. If he ain't stopping the fight, I'm coming at you, hurt or not.
Oh, yeah. No, that's the way you got to play it, man. There's very few rules in there. So you didn't get to see the main event. That disappoints me, because it was a hell of a fight. You know, I mean, John is just
I got back as soon as John had already won.
Okay. And, you know, John is just such a rare talent, and he starts every fight right away, and he did with Daniel, too. He comes across the ring, and he either throws a punch or a kick at you. There's no feeling out process with John Jones. I feel John doesn't get enough credit. You know, I feel like so many people talk about, well, yeah, but he's got this crazy length. Take the length away, John Jones still has the belt, man. That guy's got so many intangibles, and he's a fighter. I mean, he's a rough guy. It doesn't matter if John Jones is hurt. People think, John Jones has never even been hurt. No, he has been. He deals with it. He's not just physically talented. The sumbitch is a tough guy, and sometimes it pains me to compliment him, but it's very difficult, if I'm being fair, to insult his in-ring ability. I mean, he is a special talent.
Absolutely.
So he goes out, he got it. Since you didn't see it, I'll recap it for you. But Daniel Cormier, they clinch up right away, and Daniel hits him with an uppercut followed by a hook. Boom, boom, just a hard combo. Sends John's mouthpiece flying. And any other fighter would have either tried to get his mouthpiece or lost his composure at least a little bit. John said, man, I don't care if I got that in or not. And he just started throwing punches back at Daniel. All hell was breaking loose in that fight, and it even looked like the tide was turning towards Daniel, whether it was for the whole fight or just for that moment. But Daniel did seem to find some steam. And John comes over the top and just knocks him out. If you have a chance to go back and watch it, you should. It really was a great performance. And where I'm going with that is Daniel he was so down in the dumps. He was, like, depressed. He feels terrible about himself. I'm kind of scratching my head going, Daniel, you did a great job. It's a fight. One guy's going to win. But you did a great job, and you did it with the best talent the sport's ever seen. I'm not sure you should be so down.
Right.
It's just one of those deals, man. All right, so you're looking to rebound October 7th. I mean, has anybody called you out yet? Your name must be out there somewhere.
No, I mean, I went Monday. I was in the UFC, and I just went and sat in Dana and Sean's office like, well, let's do this. Let's get a fight. So Sean's good with me maybe October 7th. Dana, I think, is going to try and hold me till Madison Square Garden. So sucks, but.
And that's only a month later, though. That's November, right?
Yeah, but if I fight in November, then I can't fight in December. So I'm trying to fight in October and December. You know what I'm saying?
Sure, you need that Christmas. You need that check for Christmas, of course.
Yeah, come on now.
You might want to buy yourself an extra pony or a bowl or something. You're going to need that check.
You never know. You never know.
So George St. Pierre versus Michael Bisping, that's been rumored for the Garden. Is there legs to this, man? Is George pulling a fast one on all of us and he's just keeping his name out there? Is he gonna saddle up?
I don't have the inside scoop to shit. I have no idea. So you're talking to the wrong hombre if you think I got the inside on anything.
I'll tell you, it has appeared, a conspiracy theory, but it has appeared that George is pulling a fast one. I mean, he found a way to keep his name out there and keep his sponsor dollars coming in. The only thing about it is the sumbitch is in the practice room twice a day, every day. I worked out with him not that long ago. He felt better than when I worked out with him 3 years ago. I mean, he's putting the time in, so I tend to think he's going to get in there. But at some point, I'm a sucker too, man. It's like, George, you got to do this or let's stop talking about it.
Why 85? You think he feels better at 85 now with getting older? And you think the cuts just, or I mean, or is it just a super fight he's looking for?
You know, I just think he likes the matchup. I don't know if it has anything to do with weight. I know he was hungry when he thought there was some legs to himself versus Connor. I know that got him excited. Yeah. I think when he looks at Bisping, he goes, look, I can take anybody down. I'm the best MMA wrestler, and you come from a place that doesn't even have wrestling. And I think he's right. It's not to say he can go out there and just punk Bisping like he thinks he can, but matchup-wise, I get it.
Sure.
I do feel that Bisping, style-wise, is a better or easier match, more compelling match for George than Tyron is, or even Maya for that matter, just because George loves jiu-jitsu so damn much. I imagine there's a part of him that looks up to Maya. He probably was going, no, I want to. And I don't think, Donald, I don't think George is going to win a belt and then come back and defend it. I think the next time we see George is the last time we see George. I don't think he plans to get in there with Jacare or Romero or any of those guys at 185. I think he just likes the Bisping. He's never told me that, I'm guessing, but I'm quite sure I'm right.
Right.
I mean, what do you think of that match? Do you think it's a problem? Like, you saw some guys complaining that George could cut the line, and I'm going, guys, be fair here. Like, maybe he hasn't done the heavy lifting lately, but that's still George St. Pierre. You're telling me if George comes back, he's not the number one contender? Man, that's bull crap. He left as champion. No. He's the number one guy.
Yeah, what line? When you leave as a champion, you are still the champion. You know what I'm saying? Like, you don't got to get back in line. You're just like, hey, look, I fucking went, took a sabbatical. I was the champ.
I let you hold on to my belt. Now I'm back to get the motherfucker. So get out of my way.
You're on fire. You're on fire, and you're totally right. And it did kind of piss me off. You know, some of the guys that said it, Rockhold and some other guys, I mean, a guy like Luke Rockhold has earned the right to give his opinion.
Yeah, just the guys that he's cutting are fucking talking shit. Guys
sure.
Like me that he's not cutting in front of don't care.
Right. But I feel like if you're being real fair, it's like, guys, what kind of short-term memories do you have? George not only cleaned out a division, he cleaned it out twice. You know, he went through Koscheck twice. He went through Hughes twice. He went through BJ Penn twice. I mean, he was beating guy. He beat them all, man, and then he even beat the next generation. Getting a win over Johnny Hendricks was a special thing because when he left, then Johnny goes and picks up the belt after that. It's like, well, you know, to your point, he's still the champ. And if he wants to switch weights, man, that's George. A tiny bit of respect, please. But the guy was as dominant as anybody that's ever done it.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Steve Austin. Have you checked out the Steve Austin Show? I got family-friendly episodes on Tuesdays, and I let it all fly on Unleashed every Thursday. So get to podcast1.com or iTunes to listen and subscribe. And that's the bottom line, because I said so.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Jail Sonnen.
Let's switch gears, man. We got the show. We got the big box off. We got the McGregor versus the Mayweather. Are you excited for this?
No, I don't give a fuck at all.
Why? Why? Tell me why.
Well, I just don't care. I mean, I got so much living in life that I do that I don't watch fights and get involved in all this. So, I mean, good for Conor. That's what I mean. Son of a bitch, you made a name. You're going to make $100 million or more. Hell yeah. The outtake of the fight, I don't give a fuck, man. Whatever. I don't think there's a chance in hell you can go against pound for pound greatest defensive boxer on the planet and try and win. But, hey, that first round, you might have a chance. After Floyd downloads the data and understands your way of moving, you're fucking done. So... But hey,
listen, it is as simple as that. And I've been telling people, and I'm very proud of this line. I think I really nail it with this. We're not watching this fight to see who's going to win. We're watching this fight to see what's going to happen. And the reason I love that is just because it is very transparent. Make no mistake, Floyd Mayweather whips his ass. However, I'm still tuning in for that. There's still going to be a walkout. There's still going to be an interview. There's still, you know,
As the UFC, who's been trying and trying and trying to bury boxing for the last 10 years, why would we put this fight on, let one of our guys get annihilated, and now boxing's first again? Now boxing's number one, UFC's number two. Why the fuck would we do that?
Yeah, I hear you on that. What do you think the play is on that? I think that a little bit of the data that went into that decision was, hey, we're not giving Mayweather this huge torch to go carry in pay-per-views against us. This is going to be Mayweather's last fight. And I think they could be right. They could be wrong. But they could be right. Hey, even if Mayweather goes out in this big ball of glory, he's still done. He's not going to take that and give Aram and...
What if we talk about this conspiracy theory shit again and say, what is he done, though? What if fucking the motherfucker carries the fight before Vice lets Conor get some crazy punch, takes an L? Now think of the rematch on that motherfucker. If we're talking Floyd and we're talking money, we're talking IRS problems, we're talking conspiracy, what if he set himself up for a fucking for a $600 million payday next fight, rematch?
Could you imagine? You just blew my mind with what you just said, but could you imagine? There's some people. My mother is one of them. My mother is completely convinced. Use the NBA, for example, where, you know, it's the best of seven. She's completely convinced that those teams are in on it together, and that's why we never see a 4-0 sweep, because it's better to go to game six and game seven. And there is a little bit of legs to it. I've always have scratched my head and go, how do two teams play under the exact same rules two different nights and get two totally different results? And that is a bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah. You never know.
What else you got? What else you got for me? You been in any boating wrecks lately? You been arrested lately? Huh? You got any scoop you want to share?
I've been arrested.
I'm kidding. I'm starting a rumor.
I'm staying good. I'm out here. I'm out here on the straight. I am working in movies now, though, man. That's a thing I'm excited about. So, doing a lot of stunt work and what have it. That's fun. A lot of fun.
What do you got coming up? Any projects I can see?
Yeah, I have a big movie coming out in January. It's called Puppy Love, and we filmed that maybe 8 months ago. It's going to be fucking good when it comes out. I'm excited for it. I did a huge Netflix original called Godless, and I think that's coming out, God, in the next month or 2 months. So that's like a cowboy movie. It was a lot of fun. Super fun doing that. But, yeah, man, the acting thing's good. I go to Boston in 2 weeks to work on a badass Denzel Washington movie. I can't say the name, but it's going to be so fun.
Denzel is the most reliable guy in Hollywood. I don't care what the script is. If his name's attached, it is going to be worth your $10. And it's been that way for like 2 decades. That guy never picks a bad role, and he delivers every time. He might be my favorite actor. He really might. He's so...
He's good.
You can just count on him. I hope you get to meet him. I would love to talk to you after you meet him. I have a feeling he's a cool guy.
What do you mean I get to meet him? I'm in the opening scene of the movie with him.
Oh, the movie's already done. Okay. I thought you were getting ready.
No. We're shooting, but that's the scene I'm in with. I'm up there for 2 weeks, and we're shooting. I'm in the opening scene with him.
Oh, I'm jealous.
So,
that's amazing.
Credits roll. Movie starts. You're going to see old cowboy doing his thing.
That's amazing. Hey, do you get starstruck? You know, some people say they don't. I do. If I meet a guy that I see on TV or radio or something, and I meet him in regular life, that's a big deal for me. Like, is this a cool moment for you? You're going to get to go hang out with Denzel for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool, but I don't really get too starstruck. The only time I ever got starstruck and didn't know what to say or do is when I met Carrie Underwood, who is, like, the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in real life.
Is she as beautiful in real life as she is on TV? Because I agree with you on that.
More beautiful in real life than I, she is legitimately the most. I've seen a lot of pretty women, and she is hands down the most beautiful woman I've ever seen in real life.
And so you fumbled over yourself.
Fumbled over. I was tripping on my shoes. Didn't know what to do. I didn't know if I could just attack her and make out with her or kiss her feet. I didn't know what to do. I was just distraught.
You didn't know whether you should ask her out or go wash her car. No, I get it, man.
Yeah. Sucked. And then I did one of those things when I was walking away, like, you fucking idiot, that's what you said? That was your line? God damn it. It sucked.
Too funny. Good compliment to Carrie, though, and she's putting out some good, solid music for us. So appreciate Carrie Underwood. Let me ask you this. On a business thing, since the alphabet has taken over, WMEINGABC, when we would go fight Donald, and this is like a poorly kept secret amongst the industry, but a lot of the fans didn't know. You know, a lot of what we would count on financially was what's been now termed the locker room bonus, where you go out and do a fight and something outside your contract, they send you something in the mail. Does that still exist with the new owners? Has that practice continued?
You are fucking exactly right, because back in the day, if I would have done what me and Robbie did, Dana would have came back there and gave me I'd have got home and there'd have been either Range Rover sitting in my driveway, or there'd have been some kind of nice something in my mailbox. I haven't received anything yet, so I don't know.
All right, I've always been curious how that works. You know, when that business went, if they understood that, look, this is a practice of the industry, and it's not just these contracts, or if the new guys come in and go, well, we don't agree. You know, we kind of do just go off of the contract and the rest stays for us. So I would love that answer. I might send you a text in a couple weeks and get updated. Do you got anything else to offer? I will let you go if you got sounds like you're a busy man.
I got none of them. I'm heading to the lake right now, so that's what I'm doing.
Well, go have a great day. Thank you for taking the time. And again, congrats, and thank you for that wonderful fight, man. It was inspiring.
You got it, brother. Talk soon.
See you, cowboy. All right, Cowboy Cerrone, always fun to have on. You know, Jacob, have you heard some of the other stuff when Cowboy comes on this show? You know, I was giving Lawler a compliment to him, his own opponent. My main compliment was just what a real guy Lawler is. I mean, he comes out, he says it straight, he fights hard, you live with the result, and he's had a hell of a career with it. The same thing I should be saying, it's about Donald, though. I mean, he's just a straight shooter. You know, what about his take on Meyer Woodley? I mean, I was laughing so hard, I could hardly even ask a follow-up question. He says, well, no, you got this all wrong. Everybody knows Maya's a turd. And it's like, well, okay, maybe that is why Maya's, left unscathed in this. I don't agree that he's a turd, but I do get what he's saying. You know, that style isn't for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to listen to him right there. And if he's on topic, he's going to punch straight, and then the floor's his. And you can almost say that for his fight, too. I mean, it was a good fight. And him just coming at Lawler like that. It's too bad. I was actually kind of surprised seeing how upbeat he was. But he knew. There was a possibility he was going to win, and that was okay for him, which was really cool to watch and just listen to him talk. Because, you know, we've had fighters on before who've just lost, and some of them are just in the dumps.
Right.
And you're just like, okay, it's almost your job to pick them up a little bit and go, it wasn't that bad of a fight. You know that, right? And some of them are just like, no. They just don't really want to talk. Or if they do want to talk, it's to just bash their opponent and just bash the world at that point. But, you know, Cerrone's just like, yeah, that was a fun fight. I'm having fun. He's going out to the lake right now. He just said he's enjoying the moment. He said that was his... What did he say? He was like, that was almost a fallback moment fight for him.
Yeah,
like,
he was saying that...
It reminded him of, like, what...
Of himself in his youth, right?
Yeah.
He said, you know, I actually had fun. I was out there. I was smiling. And I could see that from my living room, you know. And a lot of these guys, and it goes both ways. It was very refreshing to hear from Donald, who came in second, and just say, look, I'm trying to get on October 7th, and then I want on December, and, you know, whatever it is, give me more. I've also had an experience where we've had guys that have won these fights, and they come on, they got a little bit of an attitude. You know, they're a jerk. They got some more pep in their step. I'm happy for them. That's the life. But if you can just stay real even keeled, if you can understand, this is my job, this is what I do, this is my profession, I gotta get up, I gotta train, I gotta go to practice when I don't feel like it, and I gotta take these matches, try my hardest, and then come back when it's done, win or lose, and just stay a regular guy, which is something that he's mastered. I think that's one of the main things that he has such an appeal to the fans. I think the listeners are agreeing with me right now going, yeah, it is really nice that this guy doesn't make excuses. He doesn't change when he's on top. He doesn't change when he's on bottom. He moves forward. He trains with the same guys. He does the same thing socially. He lives in the same ranch and takes care of the same animals. So he's just a regular guy. And it is very off-putting for me to see a professional athlete that's given a tremendous opportunity they're not entitled to, make a whole bunch of money, have the fame, have the experience, and then be down in the dumps. And it's, you know, win or lose, be down in the dumps. Or, to my point that I just made, but also to have things go their way, and all of a sudden they're too cool for school. You know, they become a jerk. And you go, no, wait a second. I'm glad you're having a good day, but, you know, in a few months from now, you're going to get tested again. And a few months after that, you get tested again. This is the life that you've chose.
Yeah. So, on that note, are there many guys anymore that just go out and have fun? Because I've heard you say before, no one likes going out there and get beat in the face. It's no fun. Like, no one does it for the fun of that. But are there any fighters that really, you know, there's some people who just go out there and they're like, I'm going to get up and train. I'm going to work for the next fight. If I win, cool. If I lose, cool. I'm just going to keep going. There's like that business-like attitude. And then they've got the prima donnas who, you know, they'll lose, they'll throw a fit. They win, they'll throw a different fit. But then are there guys who just, like, they get up and they just have this grin on their face? Can you name any, like, today? Or is that an old thing that just kind of went away now that UFC is, I don't want to say become more business-like, but it's gotten bigger. So
sure,
the pool is bigger now.
Yeah, you know, there was a guy who mentored me and who I looked up to, Matt Lindland, that actually enjoyed the competition, both as a wrestler and an MMA fighter on game day. He was in a great mood. He would wake up. He didn't feel the stresses and the pressures. He couldn't wait to get out there and do it. He actually enjoyed it. But that's a rare thing. You know, game day is the worst day. I can tell you just from the lifestyle, going to practice, working hard, seeing the guys, there's a social aspect to it, pushing yourself, but not having the stress over you. That's the enjoyable part. The stress of actual game day, things do change. And, you know, so when you ask me if there's guys that really, really do like it, Matt Lindland comes to mind. I think that Ally Aquinta really does enjoy a good, solid fist fight. But I don't think there's very many guys that do. I think most of us are acting. We're pretending we like it. We're lying. We're telling people we like it. But there's just so much on the line. There's such an incredible amount of stress going out there half naked with nothing but a mouthpiece and some gloves. And, you know, no one to fall back on. No team, no excuses, no anything right there in front of the whole world. I can't think of a different word than stress. But the few guys that don't feel it and don't feel those pressures, You know, I was able, I've been in this sport since 1997 as a fan since 1993, and I can only produce two names for you. Al Iaquinta, who I think, and maybe Al's just a better actor than most guys, I think he actually enjoys just getting in a fist fight. I think that's the New Yorker in him. And then Matt Lindland, from my own experience, everybody else, it was part of the struggle. You know, even as great as John Jones is, as great as Mike Tyson was, you know, the people that were close to him would say what an absolute wreck he was. And when the cameras came on, it was time to walk. He would put that face on like he was the scariest dude in the world. But inside, he was terrified. And Mike talks about that himself. And it's like, well, I think that's just human. I don't think that's a weakness. But it is a rarity where you find someone that actually enjoys it.
I'll tell you the most nervous I've ever been for athletics. I played baseball, but I also did some swimming, too, growing up. I'll tell you, right before getting into the pool to swim, I still believe those are the most nerve-wracking moments I've ever had. Now, I'm not afraid of water, but just the thought of getting in the water and going swimming just freaked me out for some reason. I can also tell you during practices, I hated practices for baseball. I hated them. I don't know why. There was a relaxed moment, like there's no pressure on. You're just practicing, but I hated them. But I loved the games. There was more stress. There's definitely more stress. Probably nowhere near as much as fighting because it is baseball. You know, you have ups and downs all the game, but it's game time. Same thing. But for some reason, it was just swimming. I actually can remember the butterflies coming, and then they'd go as soon as I get in the pool. I don't know what was going on. It's always different.
For
though.
Swimming, that was competition specifically, or just any day you had to go jump
into
the pool?
Just more or less just floating around with friends. Maybe it was swimming lessons. Maybe we were going to just play around and race a little bit. But it was mostly if there was some sort of like teaching or training or something like that involved. It was never competition, but like specific competition, like we go 50 meters, that kind of thing. But as far as like lessons and training and let's get you better at this, I never really calmed down with that. It was
all right,
very
let me give
strange.
You a scenario. 90 degrees out, Oregon. You got access to a pool. It's a social event. Your buddies are going to go take a dip. You showed up nervous?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just for like training stuff.
Oh, I see. Specifically
to learn how to swim, different strokes and all that. Swimming lessons. I freaked out. I don't know why. It was the weirdest thing. But to my memory, that's the most nervous I ever remember ever showing up to any sort of athletic competition or anything that had to do with athletics or something like
sure.
that. It weirded me out, but I don't know.
Yeah, I get that same feeling for any competition you want to name. And fighting isn't much different for me. I came from a wrestling background, but I just had a competition last week, the Smack Off. It was a big deal to me, and it was competition. I had that same feeling. I had that same feeling, and I had that same depression when the results came in and I didn't get the crown. And so I get that. I get the competing part of it, man. It is different. And the people that can go out and enjoy it, and it's very rare. But it is a special thing, and I've always been jealous of them. I thought, man, I wish I loved to compete. I wish I didn't feel that and could just go out. Because I do feel like some of my best moments have been in the practice room. They're not generally under the lights. And I think that all athletes could relate to that. I don't think that I'm unique or odd in that. I've just always wished that I wasn't equipped with that. I wish I didn't have that switch and I could just go out and enjoy the moment. But I can't. Stand back and smell the roses, if you will. But I can't. I can't do it.
It's that moment where you're just relaxed, there's no pressure on, and your brain just literally just shuts down. It's almost your psyche takes over. It's like I know how to do this. I know how to fight. It's just this whole I'm thinking about it is getting in my way. Same thing with any sports. It's the in-the-zone moment. It's just where everything just shuts down and you just start doing it. And then you end up being a superstar for maybe 10 minutes. And then it's gone. And then, yes, it just happens. It happens to so many people I've seen in, like, practicing. They're like, oh, my gosh, did you see that? And you're like, why don't you ever do that
right.
in real life? And they're like, I don't know. And then it comes and goes. Maybe they're a good player and maybe they're a bad player, and then all of a sudden they're a genius, and then all of a sudden reality kicks back in. They start thinking about it. They're like, oh, I want to do that again. But they can't now because they're thinking about it.
That's right.
It's a vicious cycle of self-deprecation, and even if they're not trying to be brutal to themselves.
Sure. Yeah, that's exactly right. We become our own worst enemies. We become our own biggest critics. We are our own biggest self-doubters. Oh, I wish I would have ran harder. I wish I would have lifted more. I wish I would have spent more time sparring. And instead of going, no, wait a minute. I'm ready. I did everything the coaches asked me to do. I even did a little bit extra. I've been doing this my whole life, and I'm ready. But to say that is one thing. To get an athlete to understand it, or even to do it myself as an athlete, is different. That is where the challenge comes in.
Because the challenge is we're always being told to push harder, so in from not just us, but other people, and soon that becomes the reality. And so that's a good thing to try to get better, always. You always want to try to get better than what you were yesterday. That's a very common mentality. But then to just go, you know what? I'm relaxing. It's like the night before the match, the night before the fight. There's the guys who just like they want to go that one extra mile, or you turn on TV, you turn on like a Gatorade commercial. It's like that. There's that court. It's a game of inches or sort of thing, and you went that quarter inch that the other guys. That's going to put you on top. Yeah, there's something to be said for that, but at a certain moment, you kind of just need to sit back and kick back and just go, you know what? Why am I doing this?
Sure.
Why am I really doing this? And just that. That calm state of mind where everything just chills.
Yeah.
That's probably the better state to be.
Yeah, I've talked to athletes about that because they have been conditioned their whole lives, whether it's through a Gatorade commercial or whether it was their coaches they have. You must be disciplined and you must sacrifice and you must want this more than the other guy and you hear all of these things and it's like, you know, those are really good catchphrases and those are good things to cling to. However, if you want to win the game tonight, you need to do one thing. And that is have more points than the other guy when time runs out. And when I was in college, I was coached by a man named Chuck Kearney, and Chuck was a tremendous technician. Your toe had to be over here and your foot had to be over here and your hands had to be just right and your pinky had to be in line with your thumb. I mean, he really could break down techniques. Yeah, that may sound silly, but he would freeze us in positions and come around the room and I mean, he would change a guy's body by a half an inch, but that half an inch really mattered to him. And you began to believe if I hit a perfect technique, I'm going to score points. And if I don't, I'm not going to score. We then had another coach that came in that Chuck had hired named Rick Stewart. And Rick Stewart's theory at times was grab the guy and throw him down. And there was a lot of truth to what Stewart said. You could put your toe in the right spot and make sure your pinky's over here and your thumb aligns and all these things. But at the end of the day, if I get on top of you, the ref's going to hold up 2 points.
It's kind of like how you're saying, I think you mentioned this last week. It was the two wrestling schools. It was the University of Oklahoma and the University of Iowa.
Yep, Oklahoma State and Iowa.
Oklahoma State, my bad. And it's like the difference of, almost, I could say psychology, but philosophy behind the sports. There's the technique versus the gut. And to your credit, it's kind of a hypothetical question we're raising because you could raise the question of technique over gut, but both win. No one's going to deny that. There's that time. There's so many. You read all the sports stories about how there's a guy with absolutely no athletic ability, but he's all heart. And then he wins a competition, and everyone's like, how did he do that? Well, he had enough heart. But then someone will come in the next day, and he's the cleanest, the most polished athlete in that competition, and no one can touch him.
Right.
It goes back and forth, so it's almost a moot point. But it's always fun to talk about because it's never going to end.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. And there's two wrestling schools to remind you. Two most decorated and successful wrestling programs with totally different theories. At Iowa, if you can't do something right, you do it again and you do it harder. In Oklahoma State, if you can't fix it, forget it. There's enough moves out there. Let's move on if it doesn't come natural. And neither one is wrong. And at the end of the day, you can't get around what I just said to you. If you want to win tonight, all you have to do is have more points than the other guy. It doesn't come down to who went to practice and sacrificed going to his prom or who, you know, whose parents loved him more, who got up earlier and ran the miles. It comes down to one thing. Who's got more points than the other guy when time runs out? Sports is not something that needs to be overthought. And I watch some of these guys, I watch them nervous. I see them on TV from the NFL to the NBA. And at the end of four quarters, whoever has more points advances. That's all that matters.
So here's a question, though. A little bomb going back. Where does Chael lie on that side?
I spend a lot of time thinking about it. I really do. You know, I'm not different than anybody else. I started this sport when I was 9 years old, and whatever my coaches told me from Roy Pittman to Dave Sandville is what I clung to forever. And as I got older and older and older, I realized those ideals are correct, but when you're coaching a team, and I was just part of a team, a room full, I was one of 50 guys, it's you operate under a one-size-fits-all. What's the best theory for everybody. Then as you start to get into professional athletics, it starts to narrow down. Your team becomes six guys and three guys, and then you have private lessons like I'll do with Clayton, where it's just one-on-one, where all of his attention is on me, and it's me specific. So over time, to answer your question, but where I'm going with that is over time, I have evolved my thoughts because I've realized, well, what makes me click? What works for me? What works for me might not have worked for T-Von or for Damon. Sure. It might be something different. Those guys had a different level of explosiveness and athleticism, and but here's where my strengths are. So, but when I coach guys, I coach with a broad stroke as well. Be to practice on time, work hard, do it every single day. Don't leave early. Sacrifice, give up, find the right weight class. I mean, I do coach the same way that I was coached. But as you get older as an athlete, you do need to find, well, what works for me? And most of the guys that I see do well, they're not careless, but they do care less. The guys that are relaxed on game day and come up, the other guy feel the pressure and let him go choke on it, those are the guys that do better, that are careless. Not careless, but they care a little bit less, and there's power in caring less. You know, even in a relationship, one person's going to care more than the other. The person that cares the least is in the power position, a business deal. Both sides want it, but one side wants it more. Well, the side that wants it less is in the more powerful spot. And I hope I'm articulating this well, because I'm handing you a real gem if you're picking up on this. There is a major power in caring less than the other guy. But we'll be taught that, hey, you have to want this, and you got to dig deep, and you got to fill in your belly, and you got to want it more than him. But a lot of the less intelligent members of society go on to be athletes. They really do. And athletes that overthink things often have very short careers. I call it paralysis by analysis. But people that sit down and focus and believe, hey, I've got to be focused and I got to be hyped up for it and I got to be psyched up for it and all these things, it ends up working against yourself. The guy that can kind of be a little bit more loose generally performs better.
It's from what I see how you're saying it, it's the perspective. It's the guy who's like, yeah, I've got a game today, but then There's two people. There's the one person, let's say the game's lost. There's the one guy who's like, well, now I'm going to go home. No, I'm not even going to go home. I'm going to hit the gym. I'm going to make sure I come out and I don't lose tomorrow. Then there's the guy who's like, yeah, I lost today. I'm going to go home. I'm going to say hi to my family. I'll get back up in the morning. But there's the difference right there. There's the guy who's, that's his life. That's the only thing. But then there's the other guy who's like, this is just part of it.
Sure.
It's just part of the whole process. It's part of the journey, so to speak. That's how I see you were saying it.
Yeah, I think that's right. I see guys that have done that, and a lot of them I really looked up to, and some of them did have very short careers. They just held themselves to such a high standard, and they didn't know how to compartmentalize and relax a little bit and understand not everything's going to go your way. And if you're in a sport where you're 400-0, you're in an easy sport. You're in the wrong sport. There's never been anybody that's in a real sport that can be 400-0 and undefeated. You know, real sports that are with real competition and real training, real competitive architectures, you're going to take some losses. You know, and I always try to use this because in fighting, you know, if you lose two or three fights, you're done. You're considered a bum. You know, particularly in boxing, if you've got double-digit losses in boxing, you're a joke. But I'll look at Kobe Bryant and people go, oh, yeah, he was amazing. They'll look at LeBron James and go, oh, yeah, he's amazing. Well, Kobe Bryant lose 20 times a year. LeBron James will lose 6 and 7 times a month. But you're still right. Those guys are amazing. You deal with those losses. You move forward. You peak when you can. And your results are good. And you don't carry that around with you. When you're on top of the world and you win the championship, you don't train less hard. You don't cop some new attitude. When things are not going well, you don't cry in your beer and stay home under the covers. You get up and you go back to practice and you try again. And, you know, those are the people that I'm able to respect and admire. And that is a part of longevity in any sport or business or relationship. Understanding there's days that are better than others, but you get up the next day and you move forward.
Yeah. And they also, tying back into the psychology of different people, like you were talking about being trained growing up, it really just depends on the player too. Like one of the greatest NFL coaches in history, Vince Lombardi, I was reading a biography on him, and he knew how to get the best out of each player. Like one of his players, he knew that player played best when he was angry. So Vince would get him before the game and he'd tick him off. and that would make him play the best. There was the other guy who was the work, that was his life. The football was his life. He'd come to the meetings early, sometimes run the meetings, stay late, go the extra mile, and he was the guy who was working his tail off, and he was the guy that Vince could trust. Yeah, you know the plays. I'll let you call the plays and all that. And then there was the other guy who was relaxed, who was just like, he could maybe even bum up a little bit and do things wrong a little bit. But same thing. He was like, I'm just going to come back. I'm a good player. I know how to run this game, but I'm relaxed. I'm just going to do it differently. All those guys were different, but he knew how to, in the team even, he knew how to make them reach their potential.
Sure. Yeah, and you know, we don't need an example any further than what we saw over the weekend. You know, you've got Daniel Cormier, who is Mr. Discipline, Mr. Dedicated, Mr. Type A. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm going to eat. And then you've got John Jones. What club am I going to on Saturday, and what club am I going to on Friday? But it's different. But that's how John stays relaxed, and that's just what his process is. He's identified that for himself. You've seen the results. Cormier, same way. It's not to say whose theory is better, but for each guy, you do need to find what it is makes me tick and what is it that makes me go out and put on the best performance. And it's not a one size fits all. And when you're coaching a team, I can tell you as an athlete and as a coach, it does have to be a little bit broader strokes. You've got 50 or 60 guys, you're herding them up. What's the best example that's going to get the best results for the team? But if you could individualize it, you may have a different message that you gave that athlete.
Do you remember a few years back? It was a while ago, but it was, I think, the Patriots lost the Super Bowl, and then there was this guy who went out and partied. It was a Patriot player. I forget his name. It might have been Gronkowski, even. Went out and partied that night, and he started getting criticized. They're like, oh, you don't care enough. But then his team came out and said, no, that's him. That's him. That's how he stays cool. He would have done that if we won. He's going to do that if we lose. Yeah, that's his way of approaching the game. Same thing.
Yeah, you don't need to sit around and be sour when you're down. You know, you need to remember that. If that gives you motivation, great. And you don't need to be a dick when you're on top and think, well, I got everything figured out and I don't need to go to practice today. It doesn't work that way. It's that steady guy. It's that slow and steady wins the race. I guess we've seen it. We're sitting here philosophizing about sport, but I do spend a lot of time doing that. Even when I'm on my own, I sit around and think, okay, what's the best way to do it? And I have so many regrets because as I get older, I look back and go, well, I did this wrong or I did that different. If I could just go back, and I think we all do that in life. We all do that on some level, you know, whatever the game or the field is or a job interview or a girl I wished I would have asked out or a girl that told me no to the dance, but if I would have asked her in a different way, maybe she'd told me yes. You know, we all sit around and do that. And I'm guilty of it too, but when it comes to sport, I do. I lay in bed at night and I think, okay, what's the best way to do it? And it's not just what did I do, and that's what I want to pass on to the next guy. A lot of it is what did I do but wished I hadn't? What do I wish that I would have done different? And that's what I want to pass on to the next guy. Some of the best examples I've learned from guys I really admire, you know, Matt Lindland, Dan Henderson, Randy Couture. It wasn't just to copy what they were doing. A lot of it was to see what they did and do the opposite. Not much of it. Those guys were great examples for me. But some of it was watching what they did and not making that same mistake. You can learn that way as well.
Repeating history, exactly. Just take what you like of people and go, hey, that worked. Maybe I'll try it and... Actually, no, you know, that didn't work. And so then you just find what fits you. And that's what's so fun about watching all those fights, especially this last weekend. There were so many different styles. It was great watching them all come at each other and watching who wins, because the next time they get together, it's probably going to switch up.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, I've had enough of you and I've had enough of the listeners. You got anything else you want to send anybody out on the weekend with a certain thought, hope, goal, dream, anything you want to share?
Be good human beings.
Be good human beings from Jacob and for Chael. Thank you all for listening. Enjoy your weekends and until next Wednesday, you're welcome.
Thanks for listening to You're Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. Hey, have you heard? Podcast One has a whole bunch of awesome new shows filled with big names that are waiting for you on our brand new, amazing app. This one's a game changer. There's Norman Lear talking to Amy Poehler, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Charles Barkley. Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with Bryan Cranston, Josh Gad, and soon, Neil Patrick Harris.
Nice.
OC Real Housewife Heather Dubrow's World. Lady Gang's Three Mimosa Podcast with Leah Michelle, Nelly Furtado, Elle King, and more. Plus, every episode of The Adam Carolla Show, Dan Patrick, and Rich Eisen. And if you like what happens in the ring, we've got Steve Austin, Chris Jericho, Chael Sonnen, and a whole bunch more. So download our one-of-a-kind new app and see for yourself. Go to the App Store, Google Play, or download it now at podcastone.com.